This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
Y'all can go to Destin with them tourists all around. I'll go to South Texas where my friends can be found. Lord, I know that's in Fort Alto.
All right, guys, this is the Deep in the Hunt of Texas podcast. I am your host, Connor Little, and we are back. And folks, let me tell you, it's hot. I had a little golf tournament this weekend, had to walk, did not have a good time, sweat my ass off. And I'll say it, I am officially ready. It is June 30th as we're recording this. This is going to come out on, I guess, July 2nd. But I am officially ready for hunting season. Not really even hunting season. I'm just ready for cooler weather that comes with hunting season, because it has been pretty brutal. But that being said, going to kick off here, kind of turn to the summer, getting a little more fishing, kind of diversify ourselves. We've talked a little bit about it. As those of you who have been listening from the beginning, you know I am new to the inshore game, but man, I have been bitten by the bug. Thank God I live 6 or 7 hours from the good fishing, because I would have already ruined myself financially at this point. And Lord knows I have enough expensive hobbies between, you know, trout fishing, you know, in lakes and rivers, deer hunting, duck hunting, golf. I mean, if for some reason I have chosen the most expensive hobbies out there, at least for the most part. People ask me, you know, I have some buddies who are super into watches and whatnot, and it's not in the cards for me. I'd rather have 3 box blinds than get a Rolex, and it's just not ever going to be my thing. So, but today, since I have the bug, we're going to bring on somebody who's an expert in inshore fishing, and hopefully I can get learned here a little bit, and hopefully you guys as well. We have Captain Chris Elliott on the podcast today. Chris, what's going on?
Man, what's going on? You are not lying about that heat, man. I don't know what it's like up there in Fort Worth, but down here in, I guess you could call it deep South Texas. I'm here in Corpus Christi, but it's hot, man. It's been hot. It's been windy. It's like a hot air fan blowing in your face every single day. You think it's going to be like air conditioning, and it's just worse. But hey, we're trucking through it.
Dude, that's how I felt. Like, I had a little golf qualifier on Sunday, and for the record, played terrible. And that's neither here nor there. But, dude, it was like my tee time. I dreaded it when I got it. It was like 10:30, so I was like, great, I'm about to be playing in the mid-ass heat of the day. And the wind was blowing 30, and I'm like, I could not think of worse conditions to literally be doing anything right now, much less having to walk 18 holes. And it's brutal. I mean, I feel like this happens every year, at least the past few years, where I kind of get baited into this, like, summer's not going to be that bad. And it's like clockwork the last week of June. It's just like, oh yeah, you thought. And yep. The rain,
it's only
going to
get worse.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing too. And I don't know, not to put our tinfoil hats on here too early. We might do some of that later. But I feel like the seasons are shifting, and this is just total bro science here. But like, dude, it stays hot into October and even into early November so much longer. But I feel like March and April have cooled off a lot more. I don't know what it's like down there, but that's how I feel like the last few years have been up here.
Yeah, it seems like every year it shifts a little bit, either, you know, one way or another. That. Mm-hmm. You know, I can go back in like my fishing logs, or go back and look at pictures of, you know, late October, and I got pictures of us out there wade fishing, and we're in shorts and no big deal. And then you go to the next year, and here it is the week before Halloween, and we're suited up in waders. The cold fronts have already blown through. It's 50 degrees. But then I know then it was just a couple years ago that some of us, we actually filmed a YouTube video for K Wiggler Lures, and it was like the first or second week of December, and we were wet wading. No waders, wet wading in the water. It was, you know, temperatures in the 70s, and it's a couple weeks to Christmas.
Hey, I wouldn't complain about that. You know, I call myself a little hypocrite because, you know, there was one specific morning I remember last year in the deer stand. I almost didn't go hunting, but it was like the low was like 22 and the wind was blowing like 25 out of the north. And I think the wind chill was like 4. And I was like, I'm not going to go deer hunting. And I did anyway. I decided to bow hunt that morning against my better wishes. And dude, I froze my ass off. And I guarantee you, I was sitting there saying I'd take a 100-degree day so bad right now.
Yep. But I told some people the other day on the boat, we were fishing. Of course, you know, it was mid to late June. We still have, it seems like we have the spring winds. It's blowing 20 to 30 out of the southeast every day. The winds haven't laid, you know, it's hotter than hell. And my customers were asking me about the weather and what I thought. I just looked at it and was like, you know, I'd pay some good money for a cold front right about now. You don't know what I would pay for a nice, cool north wind. And I got another several months before that even becomes a hope.
For sure. Well, I think, I don't know what happens down there, but up here, it's like this weird thing where obviously, you know, shocking, guys. This is a Texas hunting, fishing, outdoors podcast. The wind blows. That's not going to, wherever you are, it just depends how hard it's going to blow. But, what I've kind of realized is, at least up here, is I feel like the winds, they settle in like late May, June for a little bit. But once we just get that, cause you know, it's kind of those in between days where you have like a little bit of a cold front wind switch. And that's when it kind of dies down. Once it gets to this hot time of the year, at least up here, and it's going to be, you know, 95 to 100 degrees every day, that wind's just going to blow at least 15 out of the south regardless. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, see, we get it. We get the hardcore spring winds, you know, once winter's over and we stop getting those fronts, and the winds will actually shift for us and they'll start blowing out of the southeast like they, you know, like they will most of the year. During the spring, you can just bet a paycheck it's going to be windy as hell every single day. If it's blowing less than 20, as a perfect day. But then I said, I'm not trying to put a tinfoil hat on, but I can go back on my fishing logs and go back in like old pictures and stuff from when I was a teenager. And it was, you know, Memorial Day weekend, you know, going into June and the weather was great. You know, the winds were 10 to 15, everything was perfect. We didn't have those hardcore spring winds anymore. And these last couple years, like today, it still blew over 20 all day long today. Yesterday, I was out there, and I bet it was pumping 25. But usually, it seems like once that'll go away, once you really get into the dead of the summer for us, that's when it really just becomes brutal because it's going to be 95, 100 degrees. And it's usually, you know, July, August, and we ain't going to have any wind. And those are the days that you're going to want to do anything but be out there. And, you know, once that sun comes up and it's noon, that's the last place you want to be, is out on a bow of a boat in the middle of the bay. There's not a breath of wind and you're just cooking.
For sure. For sure.
But just like deer hunting, we're out there anyway.
Yeah. No, that's, and you know, you say the wind thing. I think we were down fishing Rockport probably, oh gosh, it was probably 5-6 weeks ago now. It's middle of May. Dude, like you said, it was blowing 25. Like, dude, I mean, you had 4 feet, like, Aransas Bay is awful. If you had 4 feet of chop, and you got beat up trying to get in there, and it kind of calmed down the next day, but it made the fishing hard because you know how it is. You can't see the water.
Yep.
Can't see anything. And it, you know, we were just guessing, and it was all, we've caught fish here before. We know this is a good spot. I mean, we actually had no idea where the fish were.
Yeah. And it's like, when it comes to the wind, it's different all up and down the coast. Like for us here, like fishing the Upper Laguna, fishing Baffin, truthfully, the wind is our friend. Even if you get down to like the Port Mansfield area, you get farther south, The wind is our friend. We don't have tides. People ask me all the time, "Oh, what's the tide doing today?" I'm like, "Who cares? Like, high tide, low tide, there's a 2-inch difference. You're never gonna see it. It's not like Florida where a flat's gonna drain out and then come back up in the afternoon. We don't have any water movement. It's like, especially if I'm in Baffin, you're so far from any Gulf access. Tides don't do anything. So you kind of rely on the wind to move the water to get, bait moving and stuff. So you're down here enough, you learn to just deal with it. Like, use the wind to your advantage. We always joke about it. Like, if you're only going to fish on calm days, you're going to fish like 10 days a year. Like, you learn to
That
just
talks
deal with
about
it.
golf.
Like, just, all right, it's windy, whatever. I know what to go do when it's windy. I can go to these areas. It's not that big a deal. Like, so
For
you
sure.
just, it just becomes normal.
For sure. Well, it's funny you say that because, not that this is fishing, but I will duck hunt quite a bit down around Freeport, a little farther north. And that part of the coast, obviously, it's a lot closer to the Gulf and there's not as many barrier islands there, but. Dude, we'll sit there and it's a public land spot and we'll have our spot drawn or whatever. And as those tides start to switch late morning, you literally watch you will watch your duck hole just dry up completely.
It'll
And it,
drain
it
those back legs.
and it's like, oh, okay, well, I guess hunt's over whether we like it or not.
As I said, it's different all up and down the coast. Really, once you get a little bit of tidal movement now in like Port Mansfield and South Padre, because obviously you have the Brownsville Ship Channel, and now that they've dredged the East Cut coming out of Mansfield going into the Gulf, it's a little deeper. So you get a little bit of tidal flow. It's not much. And then once you move up here to like where I'm at, Corpus, Baffin, you pretty much have nothing. As soon as you get north of me, like up like Aransas Pass, Rockport, you start getting more tidal flow that they actually can fish the tides, and you'll actually feel the current if you're wade fishing. And then just the farther up you get, closer to Galveston, like Freeport and stuff, you're gonna see more and more tidal movement where you talk to those guides and the active fishermen up there, and they're looking at the tides every morning, like, okay, high tides at 8 a.m. We need to be in our spot. They pay attention to it. Whereas us down here, I couldn't even tell you the last time I looked at a tide chart. I just don't care.
I
Doesn't
bet it
matter to
makes it
me.
easier though,
Yeah, like
there's
I'm gonna
one
look
less
at the
person.
wind. I look at the wind, I'm gonna look at the sublunar feed just so I have an idea. It's like, all right, let's go.
No, that's funny. Well, before we get too far into it, I want to give you a chance to kind of introduce yourself and kind of where you're from, what part, where you've been guiding, kind of how you got into it. I mean, I love talking to guides because they have so much knowledge and honestly just great stories. So tell everybody where you're from, kind of how you grew up into how'd you get into fishing originally and how you kind of got into guiding.
Yeah, so like I said, I live in Corpus Christi now. I was born and raised here. I grew up. If you've ever been to Corpus, I'm born and raised in Flower Bluff, right here on the coast. I still live here to this day. I've never left. And if you live here and you love to fish, it's kind of hard to walk away from this kind of place. But man, like I just fishing was just what we did growing up. Like as a kid, that was what we did. Some families go on trips, they go to Disneyland in the summer, they go camping, they go do this, they go do that. Like we went fishing. That was all my dad did. My dad still fishes quite a bit now. He's gotten a little older. He doesn't do it as much, but he started taking me. I was 4 when I first started going with him. And probably by about the time I was 7, I was just completely ate up with it. It was all I wanted to do. To the point of had Legos and stuff at home in my room to play with Legos, and I built boats. I built a marina with boat ramp and all that stuff in my room out of Legos because it was all I could think about. And all I wanted to do was fish as a kid. Turns out that bug never goes away. But strangely enough, I grew up basically chasing redfish. My dad's whole deal was redfish. He loved shallow water, sight casting redfish with lures. That was his thing. So that was what I did. That was all I knew as a kid. Like, didn't know anything about fishing for trout. Didn't know anything. Like, really never even ventured into Baffin Bay. That wasn't really anywhere my dad fished because he stayed on the flats in the Laguna. So we just chased redfish all the time. And I can think back, and I think I was 12, 13 years old. I was fishing a tournament with my dad and caught my first like true big trout. It's actually mounted in my house. It's the first big trout I ever caught. I think I was 12 years old fishing an adult tournament with my dad. Won the tournament. The trout, looking back, like I say, it was a big trout. It was 27 and a half inches long. Nothing, you know, legendary, but it was the first big one I ever caught. And that, from that moment on, the second I landed that fish in the boat and I held it, it was like, that was it. This big trout was, that was all I wanted to do. I was instantly ate up with it, was consuming everything I could about fishing and chasing trout and throwing lures. It was reading every magazine, watching every video I could. If they had tournaments going on at the marina, I was going down there to watch the weigh-ins, you just whatever I could do to learn it. And when, you know, became, you know, once I got to the point, I was a teenager, was actually fortunate enough that my dad got me a boat. I was 15. My dad got me a boat to where I was out on my own. I could go explore and I could care less about redfish. And I think it drove my dad nuts because he would ask me what I went and did that day. And I was drifting, looking for redfish throwing or looking for trout throwing lures, finding places to wade fish and trying to find trout spots and doing this stuff and not even looking for redfish anymore. And man, it's just, like I said, that bug never goes away. Like every single day, I'm like a little kid jumping out of bed when I get to go put my boat in the water. It's all I want to freaking do. But basically, I've just spent pretty much my entire life fishing here in Corpus, you know, fishing the Upper Laguna, Baffin, that kind of stuff. Here in the last probably 4 or 5 years, I've kind of ventured out now. I've started venturing down to the Port Mansfield area. I've ran some charters down there. It's not my home water, but I've gotten really comfortable fishing it where I'm really confident down there. Gotten to really learn that area now. And I've ventured basically all up the coast. I have fished every single bay system on this coast, all the way to Galveston. I've fished it all, but I can always come back to Corpus. Like I said, that's why I've never left. This is home. This is the bay I cut my teeth on. This is what I know. And then, so I started guiding, got my guide license in 2018. I was working. Knew since I graduated high school, knew that eventually I was going to be a fishing guide, but I was kind of determined that I was going to be patient with it. I wasn't going to just jump into it as a young kid. I wanted to, you know, make sure I knew the water really well, you know, knew how to get around, was confident, be able to catch fish in any sort of conditions, and kind of started building a social media following. I knew, like, you can't just get a captain's license and people just show up with a dog jumping in your boat, right? It doesn't work like that. You got to build up a name for yourself. So I really worked hard at kind of building a little bit of a social media following. You know, was fortunate enough to get some companies that supported me back then when I was young. Kay Wigglers being the number one company that supported me from day one. As you can see all the lures hanging behind me on the wall, they have supported me and had my back since day one, well before I was ever a guide. But got my guide license in 2018, and at the time, I mean, I was running a little 18-foot bay boat. I was running a little 18-foot Mayak redfish line. Had an old ass motor on it. You know, no GPS, no power pole, no fancy stuff you see on any of these boats. It was just
the way God intended, right?
Yep, it was me in a boat. You know, it was like, this is what I got. I'm a young kid. I got my guide license. Been here forever. I just got the knowledge. And, man, people booked me. You know, I was very selective on the kind of charters I booked. It was wade fishing, lures. You know, that's what I knew. That's what I booked. And, you know, I was blessed that people booked me. A lot of those people that booked me in that old 18-foot RFL still fish with me to this day. And I'm, you know, three boats later, I run a nice big bay boat now, you know, with all the fancy bells and whistles that you really don't need, but I have them anyway. But just, you know, put my head down and grind it, man. Like, It's like anything else, being self-employed, trying to build a business. It's, you get out of it what you put into it, right? You just You grind with it day in, day out. Don't ever give up on it. By no means am I a legendary, successful fishing guide. I'm just another one down here. There's hundreds and hundreds of us. But for me, I just feel like I bring, you know, I put in the work, you know, I cut my teeth with it. And I don't know. I always kind of make a joke of, you can come fish with me, you can book me, we'll fish. You know, nobody's going to want to catch them more than I do. Like, people, I get it, everybody will ask me, like, oh, you know, how long, you know, if we book you, we, you know, we go out first thing in the morning, how long are we going to fish? And my response is always the same. Like, I will fish you until you say you are ready to go home. Because if you leave it up to me, I will be out there until the sun goes down.
Heck,
I'm going to stay out there all day long. I'm going to grind until I figure something out. And once I get on a bite, I'm not walking away from it.
No, dude, that's awesome. But like, dude, that's kind of cool. Just like that story of just like having that clarity at, you know, 15, 16 year old, like, this is what I want to do. And I mean, it's like anything else, the secret's in the dirt. Well, I guess this case, the water, but it's, you know, it does take a lot of hard work. Cause like you said, there's no shortage of fishing guides down there.
No, not at all.
And to be able to kind of make a name for yourself is cool. So obviously from Corpus, know the area very well, but like Laguna Madre as a whole, I mean, some people call it one of the most like biodiverse ecosystems in the world. And obviously for fish, more specifically big trout, it is like one of the, if not the destination for it. Before we get into the what, maybe let's start with a little bit of why. Like, why is Laguna Madre and kind of just that whole southern Texas coast such good fishing?
So I think a big part of it, and this is just kind of my thoughts on it, by no means am I a scientist or anything, but we're blessed here that our bay system will always be pristine because it's so protected by land that will never be developed. You have the King Ranch on one side that's basically runs from almost right here where I'm sitting. The King Ranch starts about a quarter mile from my house. And it runs all the way down to Baffin, all the way, I guess, turns into the Kennedy at some point, all the way down to Port Mansfield. That's ranch land. It's been ranch land forever, and it's probably going to be ranch land forever, at least for our lifetime. We're never going to see that get developed. And then on the other side, the Barrier Island is the Padre Island National Seashore. Something else that there's never going to be developments on this. You're never going to have, you know, factories like I talked about. You can go to like you fish Freeport or Galveston or something. Everything's developed. You know, there's so much of what us as just the population have done just on the coast. And I think that changes the bay system. You know, you start developing things and you start changing the way the ecosystem is, you're going to change the fishery. Everything down here is never going to change. And then the other part of it is, and it's really more so when it comes to like Baffin, which is like really what's like the most legendary thing you hear about, is Baffin is just so landlocked down there. Like I said, you're like when you're in Baffin, you're so far from any sort of Gulf access. And so it's not like fishing other places where you might be wading along and see a shark or have a shark come up and bite a trout on your stringer. But that's not going to happen down here. If you're up in Baffin, you're 30 miles from Packery Channel, which is up here in Corpus. That's the closest access to the Gulf. A shark's, I can say my entire life I've seen three sharks in our bay system my entire life. Two of them, I think, were the same shark, but I saw them like 2 weeks apart on the same exact area. So it's probably the same freaking shark. But I think that's another big part of it, right? Is once a trout gets above a certain size, that's an apex predator now. There's nothing out there that's going to eat that thing. Once that trout's, you know, 19, 20 inches long, what's going to eat that thing? Like, the dolphin's not – we got dolphins. They're typically eating the smaller stuff. That trout's big enough to get away from a dolphin. So once they, you know, reach that size, they have every opportunity in the world to grow to be that trophy you see getting broadcast all over social media, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing that you hear all the time is, Baffin is this hyper saline lagoon, right? The saline levels are through the roof. That part is 1,000% true. If you've ever fished Baffin, if you guys are listening, if you've ever fished here, you know what I'm talking about. You get off the water after fishing here, your boat looks like a bass boat because the salt has dried up on the gel coat and it looks like glitter. Your clothes will be almost look like they got starched at the cleaners. Like if you're fishing in the winter, your waders and jacket will have salt lines all over them just because this water has such a high salinity. And I don't like I said, I'm not a scientist. I don't know if that has anything to do with, how quick these trout grow or anything like that. But in my mind, I think it has to, because Baffin has been forever. It's just consistently produced big fish. And fish look different. Like the fish in Baffin look different than when you go fish somewhere else. Those trout look a little bit different. Like they're genetically better.
For sure. Well, that's the thing I've always heard is like down there, I think, I've been saying this for a few months, but I'm working on a deep dive, like a history project on here for the King Ranch. And one of the kind of the drivers of how the King Ranch got developed and how they're able, Captain King was able to acquire all that was the fact that they pretty much had summed up that land as useless because there was no freshwater access that flowed into those bays. So yep. Without freshwater, I think it was only the Santa Gertrudis Creek was the only freshwater for like hundreds of miles. And that's, kind of traditionally what I've always heard is that part of the coast is just has an insane amount of salinity in the water. That's almost unmatched anywhere else because, obviously things have changed now. They've dug springs and all that on those ranches. And this was, I guess now 200 plus years ago. But traditionally, I mean, there's just no freshwater down there at all.
Yeah. Like there's no river that dumps in here like there is everywhere else on the coast. It's just this little section right here is just, it's different, it's special. Mm-hmm. It's like one of the last uncharted areas that, like I was saying earlier, I don't think we'll never see it get developed. And I'm hoping mm-hmm. Our kids never see it get developed. Like it'll always just stay what it is. Because mm-hmm. you can leave the boat or you can leave a boat ramp here in Corpus and start running down there and I'll stop the boat and you can look around. Like you see anything, you hear anything. There is nothing out here. There is nobody for miles other than everybody else on a boat.
For sure. And especially the way the King Ranch is structured now, like it's structured with the corporation. There's no owner of the King Ranch anymore. It's shareholders. So like for there ever to be a referendum to have any kind of like development on the King Ranch would be pretty tough.
Yeah.
Under kind of the circumstances that works from a business and legal standpoint. So I think that's a pretty safe bet that none of them will get developed. And I mean, I think that is kind of the cool part about fishing down there is you can definitely take a pair of binoculars and you will see some big deer.
Sorts of stuff. You see deer, you see the now guy. If you're lucky, some people might think I'm joking, but if you're lucky, you might see camels walking around. Every once in a while, you'll see somebody post pictures of it that you'll see a couple camels walking along the shoreline or something. Like, you never know what you're going to see. Because it's miles and miles of ranch land.
That's just Texas, though. You see all sorts of weird stuff. I mean, there's like some urban legend. I went dove hunting in Uvalde for the first time last September, which first of all, crazy experience. Actually don't go dove hunting in Uvalde. There's no dove. Don't do it.
Yeah.
But, I guess there's a urban legend out there. I guess north of there in Concan, there's like pterodactyls. Now this is totally unfounded, not scientific, but it's, this is like Bigfoot level stuff.
Yeah, but no
kidding. People have had like pterodactyl sightings down there. So I don't know. You might see a damn dinosaur.
You never know. You
just never know. But so kind of talked about the what and the why, and obviously the differences between like, just to what we were talking about, like Galveston and even farther north, like obviously, Galveston has what, three rivers flowing into it, four rivers flowing into it between what, Trinity, Brazos, drawing a blank here.
I'll say the Colorado south.
South a little bit.
Colorado's around Matagorda.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, those are all bay systems north of where you're at. I know that's kind of what I'm getting at. So someone who's new to this, like kind of been in the inshore game almost a year now, like what would you tell me? Like what am I looking for when I go down there? If, you know, go ahead and list your best five spots with GPS coordinates. And
right.
But, you know, just kind of generally, like if I'm going down to learn how to fish trout, and maybe we start with trout and we'll get into redfish here in a little short on that. But what do you look for when you are trying to find trout?
So I'll talk about kind of like what we're doing right now, because it's summertime and that pattern will kind of stay the same for quite a while. And then we can talk about the winter stuff, because that's really like what this place is known for. But like right now, you know, it's hot. Like we talked about that. It's hot. The air is hot. The freaking water is hot. I don't know what kind of water temps you guys see like on lakes and stuff, but like yesterday I was looking at my GPS screen and I was seeing 89 degree water. You know, we're not even in the dead heat of the summer yet. And that was, I was, you know, 3 foot of water. I'm not even up on the super shallow flats. I'm in 3 foot of water, which for us here is deep. And it was pushing 90 degrees around lunchtime. And so really, if you're coming down here and you're kind of new to it and you're coming down in the summer, you know, set that alarm clock early. Just bite the bullet. Get up early and get out there at first light. Get out there in the dark if you're comfortable with that before the heat of the day. Those fish are going to, the trout will pull up a little shallower and they will feed a little better when that water is not bath water hot. But it's kind of the same in the winter when I'm going to say this, but look for the obvious signs of bait. Look for some sort of activity. You're going to see mullet flipping. It's really the main thing you're going to notice around here. If you're lucky, you might see some birds working, but you really aren't going to see that all that often. But look for some good bait activity, some mullet moving around, flipping in the water. And when I say like fish some sort of structure, I'm not talking oyster beds and rocks or anything like that. Like coming to fish the Laguna, we have grass and sand. There's not really anything else. There's a few rocks until you get up into Baffin, and then Baffin's a whole different animal. But like, we have grass flats, and my bread and butter is finding a good grass flat that's got some scattered, you know, sand potholes in there, and focus in on these potholes. That's why I prefer to wade fish, get out of the boat or walk in from a shoreline if you can, and really methodically just work through that flat and focus all of your casts, if you're throwing a lure, on these potholes. Think of it kind of, the best way I've ever had it put to me was I won't say his name because he's going to get mad when I say this comment, but it's an old time guy, so I won't say his name because he doesn't want me to call him old. But he put it to me as, you know, most everybody understands golf, right? You get the fairway and you got the rough. Well, the fairway is these sand pockets, you know, it's just a nice, pretty sand bottom. The rough is the grass all around it. What's better in golf? The fairway. Where you have a better opportunity of getting a fish to eat that bait in the fairway. Don't go dragging your lures through all this grass. You're having to drag through a forest and hope an animal sees this thing. Get out in the opening, you know, get out in the opening, work the potholes, work it slow. If you're lucky, like I said, and you wake up early, tie a topwater on. You guys have never experienced redfish and trout blowing up on a topwater first thing in the morning. You'll go to bed that night thinking about it. Just walk slow. If you're in a boat, drift slow, set the trolling motor and move slow, and work your cast like a clock, really slow, you know, just like I see the bass guys do on TV, and they methodically, you know, work through an area fishing their structure. We're doing the same thing when we're lure fishing. Like, I work it like a clock. I'm going to start over here and I'm going to go real slow, almost like every 15 minutes of a, you know, every 15 or I say 50, every 5 minutes of a clock, I'm going to go all the way across it with my cast, you know, targeting these potholes I see. then I might do it a second time, and then I might move up 10, 15 steps. I'm going to do it all over again. And if I see a pothole that looks good, or if I throw it a pothole, I get a bite, or I get a blow up on a top water, I'm going to plant my feet. I'm going to work that pothole for probably 5, 10 minutes and just see what's there. If you catch one, stop the boat, stop your feet, stop your kayak, whatever you're doing, fish right there. Fish that pothole. If there's one, there's probably more. And just be patient with it. Like, if you try to, I keep going back to wade fishing. That's why I love to wade fish, because you take the boat out of the equation, right? If you're in the boat, you have so many things that dictate what you're able to do, right? Where you're going to be able to drift, the speed, you know, the noise your boat's going to make. If you get out of that boat or get out of your kayak, however you got to where you're at, and you wade, you are in total control. You have 100% control of what's going on. You dictate what direction you can walk. You can be walking, you know, with the wind at your back and look, and man, there's a really good stretch of potholes, you know, 40 yards over here to my left. Well, guess what? You can just use your two little feet and walk 40 yards to the left and fish those potholes real quick, and then go back to whatever line you were fishing. You don't have to get on the trolling motor and make noise or start your boat or paddle a kayak over. You just move real quiet, do what you got to do. Do it a lot. You can walk through some, you can walk, fish some potholes. Man, that was really good. I caught a couple fish. Circle back around. Fish it again. You know, you have complete control of everything that's going on. That's why wade fishing down here, I think, is like the king thing that everybody sees. You know, that's the major way that we're able to catch all these, you know, big fish that you see. If you look, like, you can go scroll through Facebook, scroll through Instagram, you know, all the big trout you see that come out of South Texas. How many of those trout do you see people holding and we're standing in a boat? There's not many of them that you see us standing in the boat. We're always in the water because you want to eliminate as many variables as you can. You know, you want to keep saying you want to be in total control of that situation.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was going to go for it.
I was going to say, so like when you're identifying like these potholes, whether, you know, you're trying to find something in a boat or look at you, this is just all visual identification of just like breaks in grass, correct?
Yeah. Good. Like a good set of polarized glasses, you're going to see this stuff. You'll be able to look down it, and like it's real easy to pinpoint. Like, look across this flat. You see all that dark water. That's grass. And all of a sudden, you see this like yellow thing. You see that little weird like oval or, you know, circle yellow thing, or, you know, some weird shape, how it kind of fingers through, and it's kind of like yellow tannish. That's sand. Like, that's a big, that's a little sand strip right in the middle of this grass. And these trout are going to sit. They're not going to, most of the time, they're not going to sit dead center in these potholes. Redfish, too. They're going to sit on the edges. Like, they're not dumb. They're predators. They're going to sit there in the edge of that grass and watch. And some shrimp or bait fish come swimming through that pothole. Now they've got open real estate to be able to ambush it. Mm-hmm. So you keep that in your mind as you're fishing and just visualize, you know, what these fish are doing to feed. They're sitting there waiting on that meal to come to them. You know, mainly trout. Redfish are most of the time dumber than a box of rocks, and they're just cruising the flat, and they'll eat a cigarette butt if you throw it in front of them if they're feeding. But trout are sitting there, right? They're an ambush predator. They're just sitting there. They're gonna wait, you know, especially like if you're able to come down here and get with somebody that has a really, really shallow water boat that's got like a good tower on it that you can drift a flat. Spend some time and just drift a flat. Don't even have a fishing rod in your hand and just look around. It'll give you a really good picture of what these fish do, and you'll drift and you'll notice if you're up high enough and you got some good sunlight, you know, no clouds and shallow water, and you'll see these trout and they'll just sit there. They're just almost stationary like a bass, just sitting there in the grass, like right on the edge of the sand. And then if you do have a rod in your hand, if you pitch a lure up to them and you haven't spooked them yet, drag a lure through that sand, they will launch out of there and eat it. Ambush predator.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, just from my experience here, that just sounds almost exactly like bass fishing.
Yeah. That's why, like, you know, me and you were talking earlier before we started recording. I was telling you, you know, when I get people that come down here and fish with me, you know, I always kind of get to know these people as, you know, we're doing the boat ride or we're on our first wade of the day. And the second somebody tells me that they have a bass fishing background, I get to relax a little bit, and I already know, like, okay, this guy is gonna figure this out. He's gonna understand this really fast. If you have a background of bass fishing and you understand, you know, the concepts of it, because I sure don't. You guys are way better than I am. You probably couldn't pay me to go out there and catch a bass if my life depended on it. But, you know, the bass fishermen, they're very methodical. They know how to pick apart a structure. They understand that concept of, you know, a fish sitting there waiting for something to go in front of them to ambush it. And they can bring that knowledge down here to the saltwater, and it correlates so well because it's so much, you know, so similar.
No, for sure. So I've always heard, you know, just in like a credence from a few different people that, like, you know, sand bottom redfish, shell bottom trout. Is there any kind of like, is that a little bit too much generic? I mean, obviously there's nuance to that, but how do you feel about
Yeah,
that statement?
so that's probably the case, you know, in some bay systems. For here, it's a little different because that shell you ain't gonna find. For the most part, you aren't gonna find the shell. You're gonna find sand and grass. Unless you's like once you start venturing into Baffin itself, you start getting into, you know, those Baffin Bay rocks that everybody hears about, and, you know, the stuff that terrifies people of running their boats up into Baffin, which, kind of like dove hunting in Uvalde, Baffin is completely full of rocks. Don't come down here and bring your boat up in there. There's no fish, and you're gonna destroy your boat. But no, it's like,
Everyone knows what we're getting at, but yeah, don't do it. Bad idea.
Don't do it. You want to fish Baffin, in all seriousness, if you're coming down here and you're new and you don't know this area and you want to fish Baffin, find a buddy that knows how to fish it, or hire a guide that's from here that knows it, at least for the first couple times you go fish it. Like I've done.
All right, guys, you know me, and I love eating wild game. But I don't eat wild game every single night. Every once in a while, I'll reach for a side of beef. And that's why I trust Omaha Steaks. Because Omaha Steaks are sent directly to my door, I can keep my freezer stocked without having to go to the grocery store. It's honestly like having a trusted butcher and gourmet food shop right at your house. Last week, I pulled out their pure ground ribeye burgers for a quick grill session. The flavor and marbling was unreal, rich, juicy, and miles ahead of any average grocery store meat. Try the burger perfection flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. I've been trying Underbrush from Nathan and Sons, and it's not really regular gum. It's remineralizing chewing gum, basically an oral care routine in gum form. You brush in the morning and at night, but after lunch, there's a big gap where most of us do nothing for our teeth. Underbrush is made for that moment. Chew it for 5 to 10 minutes, spit it out, and move on. Or keep chewing it if you like the feel of it. It's made with something called hydroxyapatite. That's the same mineral your enamel is made from, and natural saps like mastic and spruce. So it has a firmer, really satisfying chew. The company is only a few years old, and the team is literally making, packing, and shipping gum every day. So if you want a simple daily upgrade for your teeth, check out Underbrush from Nathan and Sons. Check them out today at nathanandsons.com.
On a lot of trips where I've gotten in somebody else's boat, you know, they bring their boat down here and it's, hey, look, I just want to know how to safely navigate the place. And, you know, most of us, we have no problem showing you that. We're not going to show you, hey, X marks the spot. This is where I caught my, you know, personal best trout. But we'll show you the ins and outs. But like, as far as the structure, like, it's down here, you have sand, you got grass, you got some mud, and you got rocks, and you got shallow and deep water. And I'll clarify, because deep is a relative term depending on where you're at. Some people I say deep and they think 30, 40 foot of water. And then I tell them, yeah, this water is kind of deep and it's 3.5, 4 foot. Like that's deep to us. Shallow is knee deep, is knee deep or less, you know? Like, hey, we're going to get up on this flat. We're going to be kind of shallow. And we jump out of the boat and they're like, man, this is shallow. I'm like, yeah, like it's less than knee deep, man. Like, all right, we're going to move over here and get deep. Yeah, it's belly button deep. That's it. That's as deep as we're getting. But it's, I think for the most part, for most of the year, like not talking wintertime fishing, a lot of it is more so the depth that you're fishing and kind of what's around you. Like what kind of depth and structure is around that area versus what's actually on the bottom. Like I said, it is going to be sand and grass most of the time. Like right now, like most of the stuff I'm fishing is we're fishing right off of a shallow flat. I'm not getting up on the shallow flats where it's knee deep. I'm getting kind of right off of it where it starts to taper off, you know, thigh deep, maybe waist deep, you know, right next to where the shallow flats are. Because it's hot. When the water here gets hot, there's not as much oxygen in it. They're going to kind of linger out. The fish seem to linger out a little deeper, especially the heat of the day. So you kind of want to not be super shallow all the time. Mm-hmm. But wintertime, it's a little different. So wintertime, more so you're looking at the structure, but it kind of more so, at least for me, it's more about the weather. Now, if it's colder than hell, and it's been colder than hell, then I'm looking at the water temps, and I'll move around, and I'm going to find something that's maybe a degree or two warmer than everything else around it. And it might be a degree or two warmer because, hey, there's, you know, some rock piles around this area. Those rocks are absorbing some of that sunlight. It heats up the water right there. Or it might be, you know, the mud, you know, as much as we hate wading through some of the mud's going to hold the heat, right? The mud's going to keep that water just a little bit warmer. And when I say a little bit warmer, like you might be running around, if you can see the water temp in the winter, it might be 58 degrees, 57 degrees, 58 degrees. And all of a sudden you find somewhere that's 60. Stop right there and fish it. That 2 degrees is going to make all the difference. Like just something just a little bit warmer, especially if you find something in the winter, that water is a little bit warmer. All of a sudden you start seeing some bait activity there. That's where you want to fish. And typically that's going to be, oh, wait a minute, this is kind of a muddier bottom, you know, that's going to hold that heat a little better. Like the shell, you know, you hear like shell and fish and reefs and stuff like that. That's farther up the coast. You get up like Aransas Pass, Rockport, and you start getting north up there, especially like Galveston and stuff like that, where they have oyster and reefs and, you know, shell bottoms coming off of spoil islands. That's where you kind of start hearing that about, yeah, we're fishing some shell, you know, catching trout. Like, we don't have that down here.
So does that kind of like, you know, you say you're targeting trout, but, you know, there's going to be a lot of, you know, cross with drum, whether it's, you know, redfish or black drum, just because it's, you know, they're all sharing the exact same habitat down there.
Yeah, they'll be all intermingled. The drum... I'll take back what I said earlier about redfish being dumber than a box of rocks, because sometimes the redfish will piss you off so bad because you couldn't get them to eat anything. Drum, most of the time, if you play around with those fish enough, you will start understanding, I personally feel like how stupid those fish are, because you'll find them. Like one of my favorite things to do, especially this time of year, I said I tried to do it yesterday. It just didn't pan out. I found some drum. I messed it up. But you'll find these drum, they'll school up. A lot of times when you find the drum, they're in big pods. You know, they're schooled up, and you'll find them super shallow up on some sand. Like, we found some yesterday. I found them on accident, ran them over. Go ahead and pay attention. But I was in a foot of water running, you know, hiding from the wind, trying to go from spot to spot, and all of a sudden ran over probably 200, 300 black drum that ran a school up on a sandbar. Of course, circled back around and stopped, and not even joking, waited 5 minutes after I had just plowed through there in my boat, waited about 5 minutes, and the drum come right back to where they were. instantly.
That's crazy.
Like, and you can, like, one of the best things to do down here is to chase those drum super shallow like that. If you like sight fishing, like people love sight casting, you know, redfish and stuff, like you see that up and down the Texas coast, you see it in Louisiana and Florida. Like, man, the drum are fun. They're a little more picky about what they're going to eat. You can't just drag a gold spoon or a paddle tail in front of them. You got to kind of be selective about it. But if you're geared up the right way, they're a lot of fun because you can find a school of them. I'll typically use Berkeley Gulp makes, you can get like a small, like 3-inch Berkeley Gulp shrimp, or if you can find them, Berkeley Gulp makes their little crabs, like a little 2-inch crab, and just slide that thing on like an 1/8 or 1/4 ounce jig head, and you can pitch that thing in front of a drum, like up on the sand as they're rooting around looking for something to eat, and they'll suck it up and eat it. And you can cast into a freaking pod of them, hook into one, and scare every drum within 100 yards, reel it in, wait about 5 minutes, and they'll all just come right back and go right back to what they were doing.
Dude, that's awesome. Yeah, it's, you know, it is kind of funny too, because, you know, everyone knows this, but there's quite a few drum I've pulled up where, you know, you just check the back of them and got a few prop scars in the back of them for sure. That's definitely not uncommon. For you PETA folks out there listening to a hunt podcast, the fish are fine.
They heal just fine
for sure, and they eat just as good too.
Yep, that's the other thing, man. People, like, you know, obviously, like the trout and the redfish, like those are the game fish that, you know, get glorified. Drum are excellent table fare, man.
Like, they're my favorite.
If I'm keeping one to throw on the grill, I'm looking for a drum on the way home. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what's getting cooked. A drum, you get a drum, a small one that's, you know, a little bit, you know, maybe 1 inch or 2 big enough to keep, you know, still under 20 inches long. That's amazing table fare.
Yeah.
And they're everywhere. If you find one, you typically find a bunch of them, and you can catch a whole bunch of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you go to most restaurants down here in South Texas and you order fish off the menu. That's what it is. That's what's commercially harvested down here. The commercial fishermen are harvesting black drum. You go sit at a restaurant here and get fried fish. Yeah, that's black drum. That's what you're eating.
For sure. So I've always, you know, pivoting back to trout here, I've always heard there's trout fishing and then there's big trout fishing. And that's two totally separate things. Is that, what can you kind of tell us about that?
So, you know, like I'm talking about, like when I was talking earlier about, you know, finding these flats a little deeper, you know, looking for bait and, you know, working these areas and, you know, getting bites. You can catch trout and you get into a bite, you can catch a whole bunch of them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we start talking like trophy trout fishing, that's not something we're doing right now. Like, mm-hmm. You might catch one. You're still going to catch those big fish in the summer. They'll be intermingling with the small trout. But that trophy trout. Yeah, it'll be random, right? That trophy trout fishing stuff is what we do in the winter and the spring. Really, it kind of starts around November when we first start getting some cold fronts and they start kind of eating better. They start fattening up a little bit and they start kind of being lazy. And try to think of a nice way to say this because I've hurt people's feelings in the past.
No feelings get hurt here.
You can
let's just say it.
A lot of people say they want to come catch a big trout until it's time to go do big trout stuff. I've had I don't know how many people on my boat that's what they booked me for. They come down here from all over the place. I've had people fly here from other states. I want to catch a big trout. That's what we're going to do. And they'll come book me for 3 days. And I usually tell people, I'm like, okay, if we're grinding in the winter and we're looking for a big trout, don't expect to catch a lot of fish today. Like, we are going to fish a selective areas. One, I'm going to fish areas that historically we have caught big fish. That big fish just seem to hang out in these areas during certain conditions. There might not be a lot of other fish there. Like, we talked about an apex predator. That trout is an apex predator. For those of y'all that don't know, trout are cannibalistic. They will eat each other. That's why like Texas Parks and Wildlife has their hatcheries and stuff that they, you know, breed redfish and stuff. Actually, one of them is just a couple blocks from my house right here. Their biggest hatchery down here in South Texas is right here where they breed redfish. Parks and Wildlife can breed redfish no problem. They don't eat each other. They can breed all they want and release the fries. No big deal. When it comes to trout, you start breeding trout, they eat each other. They will. You can throw a topwater that's painted like another trout, and a big trout's going to demolish it. If you fish down here enough, you can be reeling in a little 10-inch trout, and a big-ass 28, 29-inch trout might come eat that little one as you're reeling it in. So part of that in my mind is if you're chasing these big fish and you're in these areas that you think, you know, there's a chance that there is a big fish there, there's probably not going to be a whole bunch of other stuff. You know, we joke about you're fishing for, you know, the one. You're fishing for that one bite. And so that's why I made that comment earlier about people say they want to come catch a big trout until it's time to do it. And then we bring them out and we're 2 hours into the day and they haven't gotten a bite yet. And they, you can see it in them. They'll just kind of start getting discouraged of, oh, you think we can go somewhere and get bit? Like, well, you want to go catch fish or do you want an opportunity to catch a big one? Because we're going to wade this shallower flat where a big trout would get left alone. They didn't get that big by being stupid. It's the other part of it. A big trout did not get big. They don't get big in 2 years. That's the other part of it. You catch a big fish like that, they're old. Like you catch these big trophies, they're 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. They've survived their whole life not getting, you know, eaten by a bird. They didn't get eaten by a dolphin. They didn't get eaten by another trout. They didn't eat somebody's croaker last year during the summer. You know, they haven't fallen victim to any of that. They haven't been cut up by a fillet knife. They're smart. Mm-hmm. Where do you go when you're smart? You're going to go to a secluded area away from everything to get left alone. With a little bit of a food supply, you know, and just live out your old age like a retirement home. And so when I'm big trout fishing in the winter, that's where my mind's at of where would I be if I was a big trout to just be left alone to just do my thing. I'm not going to be in the hustle and bustle of where everything's at, kind of off the beaten path. Might not be that fun of a wade. For that reason, it might be some rocks, it might be some mud. Most of the time, it's actually pretty shallow, believe it or not. Most of the time, you're catching trout and it's thigh deep or less for the big ones. But it's a grind. Like you'll hear us talk about that all the time of just the grind. You know, you got to grind for them all day long. Sometimes you get lucky and you catch one, you know, 30 minutes into the day. But it's just, it's big trout is a... The majority of it is just the mental game. Mm-hmm. He said, I don't know. That's one aspect of it. I don't know if that really correlates to bass fishing of, you know, chasing a 10 pound bass. If it's the same deal of, you know, they do their own thing and they're off the beaten path, then you got to have the mindset to just go chase the big 10 pound bass. But for mm-hmm. us, like you have to have that mindset of that's what I'm going after today. And that's why, like, truthfully, that's why not a lot of people do it successfully because they can't play that mental game with themselves. Like I said, I see it all the time in the winter with people. I have very good friends of mine that are hardcore fishermen and they can't do it. They can't get over that mental game of, dude, we might walk this flat for 7 hours and it's raining. It's 50 degrees outside. The water's 50 degrees. It's miserable. You might not get a bite for 7 hours. But then when you get that one bite, that's what you worked for. Like you got to be able to play that mental game with yourself, but you got to be in the right area.
For sure. So obviously, you know, we've talked a lot about wading and stuff like that and how to spot them. What are kind of your go-tos? I know you said wading with lures. What are kind of some of your go-tos? Are you using soft plastics, hard baits? How do you break it down?
If I had it my way in a perfect world, it would be a topwater day in, day out, sun up to sundown. I could just throw a topwater all the time and get them to eat that just because it's so freaking cool watching these fish come up and eat a topwater on the surface. But you can, like, for like this time of year, I'm kind of thinking, I don't have my weight boxes are in my boat. This time of year, you can almost guarantee when I'm getting out of the boat, I've got one or two topwaters with me. And I'll tell you right now, and I will die on this, I could care less what the color of that topwater is. I could absolutely care less if it's pink, brown, gold, black. I don't care. The color of that topwater in my mind does not matter as long as it's got some sort of rattle in it. You know, topwaters, you can go to the tackle shops. There's all sorts of brands, right? There's all sorts of brands that sell all these different colors, different shapes and stuff. Pay more attention to the profile of that topwater bait and the sound it makes. If you're going to carry two, carry one that's a little louder, carry one that's a little quieter, like one that's bigger, one that's smaller. Don't get all caught up in the colors of them. Don't go buy 75 different topwaters and carry them just because it's every different color of the rainbow. If you don't believe me, go buy all 75 of them. If you have a pool at your house, you got a buddy that has a pool, go throw all those topwaters in a pool, put a pair of goggles on, swim to the bottom and look up. And you tell me what color you see.
That's a good point. Define what you mean by profile too. Sorry.
By profile, like different topwaters are different sizes, right? Like take like all the spooks, you know, Hedden makes all the different size spooks. You know, they've got a super spook junior that's, you know, maybe 3 inches long. It's real short. You know, it's got a real quiet rattle to it, right? Mm-hmm. Carry one of those for your calmer days. It's not real windy. You're shallow. You don't want to make a lot of commotion, just enough to kind of get a fish's attention. If it's real windy outside, you know, it's windy. It's, you know, the water's got a little, you know, stain to it. It's dirty, you know, whatever. Throw something bigger. Like, you know, Hedden makes one called a one knocker. Quite a bit bigger, got one big ball bearing in it that's really loud every time you twitch it. My favorite now, the last few years, is the Mansfield Knocker. It's kind of it's like a peanut style topwater bait, kind of shaped like a peanut, but it's got a real distinct loud rattle, and it's kind of like a in-between profile of like a small topwater and just a big freaking massive one. It's kind of right in the middle. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of been like my bread and butter for the last, you know, 3 or 4 years. That seems to be about the only thing I'll throw. But like when I say profile, because I'll talk about that, like with like soft plastics and hard baits and stuff, profile, just how big is that thing? Mm-hmm. You know, what's the size of it? That's more important than what color it is and all what brand and what custom painter did it. You know, what's the size of this thing? That's what the fish is going to see. The fish is looking at how big that piece of bait is. Mm-hmm. You know, you're trying to, you know, you hear us talk about match the hatch. You're trying to match, you know, what their food is. So you kind of want to dictate your lures on that, right? So like right now, summertime, even into the fall, guarantee I'm going to have a topwater on me. Like I said, lately, it's going to be a Mansfield Knocker, you know, peanut style topwater. It's probably what I'm going to throw first thing in the morning. You know, first thing right out the boat, that's what I'm going to throw just to, you know, it's low light conditions. They seem to be more fired up, try to get some bites on it. If that doesn't work, depending on how I'm feeling, I might go to some sort of hard bait. And lately, especially this summer, I've been throwing there's a company down here called Texas Custom Lures that makes one called a Double D. Kind of looks like a mirror lure Miradine, but it's not a topwater and it's not a suspending twitch bait. It's kind of right in the middle. It'll float until you twitch it. It'll float as you try to work it like a topwater, like you're going to walk the dog. Every time you twitch it, it kind of dives down a little bit. As you pause it, it's going to kind of flutter back to the surface. So you guys that fish down here a little bit, if you guys throw like corkies, like corky fat boys and stuff, it's kind of like a corky in reverse. Corky sinks really, really slow, and then you twitch it back up. Double D does the opposite. And what I have found is if these fish don't want to eat a topwater first thing in the morning, you know, they'll come up, they'll slap at it. They're not fully committing to it. You know, that topwater bite's just not what they want. I'll throw that double D. It's kind of got a little bit of a bigger profile. It's a bigger profile than throwing like a soft plastic. But you can work it like a topwater and just almost work it right under the surface. It also works really well if you're somewhere, you know, especially when we deal with all this wind, if you got a lot of floating grass or something floating around, it's not exactly the best time to throw a topwater and drag treble hooks across the surface. It's like dragging a rake. Doesn't work. You can throw that double D and stay right under the surface. Mansfield Knocker, like I said, that brand of topwater that I throw, they also make a bait called the Darter. That Darter is kind of the same concept as a double D. It's a little suspending bait, and it will, exactly what the name is, you twitch it and it'll dart. And you can keep that thing just under the surface, a nice hard bait, right under the surface, underneath all that floating grass, and work it like a topwater. So, like, my boat's not here, but I could probably could walk over to my boat right now and open my weight box. I guarantee you there is two Mansfield Knocker topwaters in that thing. There is a Darter, there is a double D, and then there's going to be an array of soft plastics, right? Soft plastics, it's a complete personal preference. There's hundreds of brands. Every brand has their own style. But if you break it down to just simplicity, there's straight tails and there's paddle tails. Some sort of paddle tail. The paddle tails might look different brand to brand, you know, but there's straight tails and paddle tails. 9 times out of 10, if I'm throwing a soft plastic, it's a straight tail. I'm going to put a straight tail on some sort of jig head. Most of the time, it's like an 1/8 ounce, and work the hell out of that thing like you're popping a shrimp. If it comes to the, like, if I'm throwing plastics, at that point, I've already determined a topwater doesn't work. A twitch bait doesn't work. All right, I'm going to do it the old-fashioned way. I'm going to throw a freaking plastic. I'm going to bounce that thing along the bottom, right? I'm going to bounce it off the bottom, bounce it through the potholes. You know, you can figure out, once you have a soft plastic on, you have free rein to kind of work every inch of that water column, kind of figure out where they're at. But what I usually tell people, especially this time of year, really even into the winter until it gets like dead cold, is I start at the top of that water column on the surface first thing in the morning, and I'm just going to work my way down to the bottom until I figure out where these fish are. And again, when I say working down the water column, I'm not talking 10 foot of water. I'm talking
1, 2, 3.
Yeah, 1, 2, 3 foot of water. That's it. Yeah. But you just figure out where they're at, right? You know, these fish chilling on the bottom. They're lazy. They're not really in an aggressive feed chasing stuff. I'm going to drop a soft plastic on their head and get them to eat that. Every day you're leaving the dock hopefully I can put this topwater on there. Just going to crush this topwater till lunchtime.
Hey, that's always plan A. There's always a plan A.
But man, like, I don't know. The lure game has evolved so much. I guess it's kind of just, it's the same way with any sport, right? Like the hunting stuff has evolved. The fishing world has evolved, and there's all sorts of different lures out here now. I said, I'm not a bass fisherman, but now I've been paying attention. Now there's some weird bass lure. Now that's all the craze. Looks like a freaking sea urchin. I couldn't even fathom in my brain how that thing works for you guys. I have no idea what's the deal with this thing. But
I know what you're talking about. It's like the little orb or whatever.
Yeah, like I keep seeing these pictures and videos. Yeah. I'm like, that? Like, that works? Like, whatever. But, you know, like, we joke about it. Like, we keep trying to reinvent the wheel when it comes to this stuff, like the latest and greatest. And now we've got this and we've done that. And now we're going to, you know, now we've developed, you know, this type of lure, or everything changes. You know, I try my best to just, I keep things as simple as I can. Like, I've collected a bunch of really old lures and stuff, you know, from the 60s and 70s and 80s and stuff. I got old stuff, and every once in a while I'll grab something and go out there, and guess what? It's 2026, and that lure from 1970, yeah, it still catches fish. It still works.
For sure.
But here we are, this day and age, and we're, you know, changing, you know, we're custom airbrushing stuff, and we're making all these fancy baits and doing all these things. And it's like, Like, this stuff's cool, but in my mind, like, man, the simple stuff still works.
Hey, like, there's a reason people are on the jetties catching fish with popping cork shrimp.
Exactly. Like, an old Alameda float with a hook and a shrimp will still catch fish.
Mm-hmm.
Those of y'all that are familiar with the coast, an old Coquihoe minnow or an old speck rig, that stuff will still catch fish. Our grandpas were throwing that stuff. And guess what? You can go pull it out of grandpa's tackle box. It is still going to work.
For like, sure.
Things work. So, like, I don't buy into the latest and greatest that much. I'm not going to say I don't buy the stuff. I'm a man. I buy stuff, too, just because it looks shiny. Trust me. I bought more lures than I'll ever throw. But you can have all the freaking lures in the world, and I still throw like the same four or five.
Oh, I get it. I get it. It's like, yeah, you see all these golf clubs back here?
Yep.
You know how many of these golf clubs I've hit back here in the last 2 years? Probably none of them. So trust me, I know the feeling.
It's kind of the same, like you were joking earlier about hobbies and stuff. Like, I was never a huge like deer hunter or anything. My wife grew up deer hunting and stuff. I've done it. It's fun. I was a big bird hunter, but you know, fishing just consumed so much of my life that I kind of just gave up every other hobby that I had in life. And in the last few years, my brother kind of got me into disc golf. For some reason, normal golf was just never my thing. Like, we're going normal golfing, cool, I'll bring some clubs, but I'm going to bring a freaking 12-pack of beer, and we're just going to have a good time.
For sure.
I could care less about hitting that ball. I completely suck at it unless I'm at Topgolf, and for some reason at Topgolf, I guarantee you I'm going to win. But my brother got me into disc golf. You know, it's cheap to get into it, gave us something to do, you know, after work, you know, during the afternoons, if we didn't want to fish or something. You can go play at a public park around here. Corpus has a whole bunch of places you can play. And I quickly realized the disc golf game was just like fishing. You can go into there's a disc golf store here in Corpus, and you can walk into it, and there's 400 different kind of discs. And you can go buy a whole bunch of them. Like, I got a bag with probably 20 of them. And I throw three. And after a couple months, you know, I got so ate up in it, like most of us do. As soon as you get into a new hobby, right, you're going to get so ate up with it. You buy everything you possibly can. Mm-hmm. And then I was a couple months into it. I'm like, this is just like fishing, man. You go and you buy all the gear. You buy the latest, the greatest. You buy all. You can't see it off this camera, but on the other side of the stuff hanging, there's God knows how many rods and reels hanging on the wall. There's all this stuff. And there's rods and reels that are in my boat barn. I throw the same two rods. I throw the same four or five lures, despite everything that's hanging behind me and everything I have in cabinets behind me. I was like 3 months into the disc golf. I'm like, hey, wait a minute. This happened again. I bought all these discs. I have them all in this bag that I lug around the park playing disc golf, and I'm grabbing the same three, my main driver, a mid-range, and the same putter on every single hole.
It's the way it goes,
I guess it's
man.
The same in normal golf.
It's the way it goes. Well, this is my favorite question to ask guides, but, you know, you got any crazy guide stories, like, you know, husband and wife getting divorced because they fought on it? I mean, you don't have to out anybody here, but I know you have to have some good ones here.
Okay, so anybody that listens to this, if they go look me up on social media, you're either going to find this video or you have already seen this video because it's got I don't know how many millions of views. But a couple years ago, I guess this was 2 years ago, I was in Port Mansfield running a charter, and it was kind of a big group deal. It was a fishing tournament, but it was kind of a corporate fishing tournament deal where they bring in a whole bunch of guides and we take a bunch of people fishing, you know, but the company that hired us, they're having their own little, you know, company-wide fishing tournament, right? And funny enough, I had the big wigs of the company in my boat. I've done this tournament year after year. So I take a buddy of mine takes the owners of the company. I had the VPs and we're fishing and it's, you know, it's September is when we do this and it is brutally hot, dead freaking calm. The bay is like a complete glass mirror, right? And we're set up wading this flat. I got my customers out wading it, and I'm sitting in the boat drinking water, and I start hearing this noise. Sounds like some buzzing. I'm like, man, what the hell is that? Almost sounds like a bee. I'm out here in the middle of the bay. All of a sudden, I see a bee. I'm sitting in my boat, and I see a bee kind of start circling my boat. Then I see four more, and then I see like 20 more, and then I see like 5,000 more. And I start realizing that there is a complete swarm of bees circling my boat. And instinctively, I jumped the hell out of my boat and just bailed and got away from it. Luckily, you know, we're in the shallow water, you know, knee deep water. And I just run away from my boat. And thankfully, I pulled my phone out. I started videoing the whole thing, which I ended up making a TikTok and an Instagram reel of this thing that went freaking everywhere. I had news stations calling me, wanting to interview me on this thing. But these bees, I'll send you this video when we're down here today. You can go see it. I jumped out of the boat, and these bees congregated and landed on the console of my boat. I got a big burn bar that comes up off my console and everything, and they just swarmed to it. Looking back on it, I think what happened was they were migrating across the water. The queen got tired. The queen landed on my boat.
Oh.
And they just, and I mean thousands of them, thousands of bees. I mean, just completely just attached to my boat. But at that point, let me paint y'all a picture. I'm standing in the water in the middle of absolute nowhere land, in the middle of the bay, with customers with me looking at my boat that is now covered in bees, thinking, nothing in my life has trained me for this exact moment. I'm usually prepared for just about everything out here. I've been doing it my whole life, and nobody ever told me about this. And so trying to figure out what to do, and a buddy of mine that had some customers, he was right next to me, and he saw what was going on. So he comes out over to me, and he's like, what's your game plan? I was like, you got a jacket in your boat? Like a rain jacket that I can put on? He's like, yeah. So he gives me his jacket. I throw my rain jacket on. And I walk over to my boat, and my customers are like, what are you going to do? And I'm like, well, my thought is I'm going to climb in the boat, and I'm going to crawl to where I can reach up and hit the key on my ignition. I'm gonna lift my power poles, and I'm going to point my boat away from y'all, and I'm going to slam the throttle and just take off. My boat does 50-something miles an hour. Surely these bees are going to disappear, and we'll just take care of this. And I'll have a jacket on. Hopefully I don't get stung, right? I'm not allergic to bees. So as I'm climbing in the boat, one of the guys goes, hey, before you do that, throw us a couple beers before you leave. You might be gone a while. So you take care of your customers, right? So I open the ice chest. I throw some beers out to them. I shut it, and they filmed it, and I lay it on my stomach. Crawled up, you know, got on my knees, reached up. My console's real freaking high. Reached up, turned, like, opened, lifted my power poles, started the motor. As soon as the motor started, I just slammed the throttle. Took off. Well, in case y'all were wondering, you can do close to 60 miles an hour in a boat, and bees will hold on.
Oh, shit.
They don't come off. Not one. They will swing in the wind, attached to each other. They hold on for dear life. And so I took off and got, you know, way away from everybody. I'm out in the middle of the bay like a dumbass, just doing donuts and figure eights. I'm like, what the hell am I going to do now? I can't get them off my boat. Like, what the hell am I going to do? And so I was like, you know what? Screw it. Like, I'm just going to take this. I'm taking this thing back to the harbor. I'll figure it out there. And so I just pinned the throttle and I'm booking it across the bay. And pulled my phone out as I'm laying in the boat, and I called my buddy. I'm like, hey, just put my customers in your boat. I'm not coming back. Like, I can't put them back in this boat. I'm going back. I'm going to just figure this out.
Oh, God.
And so I hauled ass all the way back to Port Mansfield Harbor. It's a long no-wake zone in that harbor to get anywhere. So I had to idle through the harbor of everybody looking at me and my boat just covered in bees. And I'm like laying next to the console. Somehow I actually never got stung in this process. And I called a friend of mine that has a lodge on the water down there that, you know, there's all sorts of piers and stuff. And I call her. And I'm like, hey, do y'all have anybody staying at the lodge right now like anybody outside. She's like, no, there's nobody here. I'm like, all right, cool. Stay in the building. I'll be there in a minute. I got a situation. Just look out the window. You'll see what I mean. Pulled up there, docked my boat. And as soon as I was able to dock it, just dropped the power poles, jumped out of the boat and took off running. Got away from the boat, let the bees kind of settle, and then started the contemplation process once again of what the hell am I going to do to get these bees off of my freaking boat? Like, Port Mansfield's not exactly a big town. There's nobody there.
I was going to say, I don't know any beekeepers in Port Mansfield.
I think we're past that. As much as I don't want to kill them, but I kind of need them off my boat. This is a safety thing now. And so my buddy that picked up my customers, he brought them back because it was luckily this was all at the end of the day. This wasn't like first thing in the morning. This was like we were last spot of the day, right? So he brings my customers back, drops them off, and he meets me over there where I'm at. And what we ended up doing was we grabbed two water hoses and I'm suited up in a rain jacket and I was spraying my boat like a fire hose, you know, high pressure nozzle on this water hose, spraying my boat, trying to knock the bees down, either kill them, get them to fly away, whatever. And while I was doing that, he was standing about 30 foot behind me with another water hose spraying me. And that kept the bees off of me.
Jeez, man.
And after probably in a solid hour, we got it under control. Either the queen finally left, we killed the queen, we really don't know. And we had a murder scene of bees everywhere.
Dude, that's insane.
Like, dealt with it, you know. After it was all said and done, you're able to laugh about it, right? In the moment, this is like World War II. Holy hell, what are we doing? We're able to laugh about it afterwards, clean the boat, put the boat on the trailer. And by that point, Port Mansfield's not a big town. Everybody in the town had already heard about what had happened.
That's crazy.
I was joking about it with some other buddies. We'd all finished our charters. We're kind of joking about it, drinking a beer. And the police chief pulls up. He had heard about it. And he's like, man, you're the one that had the bees on your boat, huh? I was like, yeah. And he goes, you don't have a fire extinguisher? I'm like, well, yeah. He goes, that would have killed him instantly. But never thought of that.
Dude, I mean, how can you? I mean, when something like that happens, you just go lizard brain. You go lizard brain.
Yep.
And you're just like, I don't know what to do. what are you? I mean, now if you ran into some more bees, you can use your fire extinguisher.
Like, nobody trained me for this. Like, I've been doing this my whole life. I thought I was kind of prepared for whatever this lifestyle could ever throw at me. I've been caught in storms and, you know, dealt with jellyfish and stingrays. Like, I've been through it all. Not a bee swarm in the middle of the bay.
I mean, that wasn't part of getting your captain's license?
Yeah, right. That was right after learning how to plot a course. Was learning how to fight bees.
Jeez.
Yeah, well, somebody asked me about a guiding story. That is by far number one.
That's good. At least no fist fights. I've had a few of those.
I can honestly say that everybody that I've taken, I've never had a bad customer. Like I've never had a bad customer that just, you know, made the day unenjoyable.
Hey, let's knock on wood on that.
Yeah.
You know, just to be sure, for sure. Well, last question, I'll get you out of here. I used to ask this to everybody. I need to get back in the habit of it. What's the best Tex-Mex place in Corpus Christi?
Oh,
can't say a chain. Can't say a chain.
Oh, no, no. Man. Well, I would say a certain place, but as of a few months ago, it is no longer here. They closed down.
No. Oh, no.
Yeah, I was pretty heartbroken about it. I
hate that.
But when you say Tex-Mex, if you say Tex-Mex, there's places here everybody comes to for Tex-Mex. I prefer the authentic, like, we're eating real Mexican food. Like, you better bring somebody that knows how to order in Spanish. And there is a little hole in the wall. It's on the other side of town from where I live. And it's called Las Espuelas. And when I say little hole in the wall, it's, I don't know, 10 tables in this place. and bring somebody that knows how to order in Spanish. It's going to be the same two waitresses every single day. They're going to greet you with a smile, and the food is always going to be legendary. If you can't find that place, I will give everybody a tip. If you do come to South Texas, if you want to find the good Mexican food down here, drive around until you see a Mexican restaurant with law enforcement parked in the parking lot. If you see police or DPS or somebody parked in the parking lot of a Mexican restaurant, pull in that place, that's going to be some good Mexican food.
That's they good.
Know where,
I like
they
that.
Know where to find it.
I like that. That's good stuff.
It's well, usually before we go, a far away.
Absolutely. Well, before we go, you know, if somebody who's listening to this wants to book a trip, wants to get a hold of you, what's the best way to do that? And I'll throw your Instagram in the profile.
Yeah, I was gonna say best way, honestly, you know, hit me up on social media. That's really the best way to get a hold of me. You can find me on pretty much any of the platforms I got. I'm on Facebook. Main one is usually Instagram. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I'm on TikTok, even though I don't post all that many TikToks anymore. Kind of got burned out on that deal. But you look me up on social media, you know, Captain Chris Elliott. You'll find me. Shoot me a message. We can kind of talk about what it is that you're wanting to do. You know, there's so many different things we can do down here. You know, you want to come target a big trout in the winter, to you want to bring your kids in the summer and, you know, let your kids have a good time. You know, we do it all.
Cool. Awesome. Folks, that's Captain Chris Elliott down here in Corpus Christi. We will see y'all next week.